I'm sorry, how long is the share?
20 minutes, Amy
20
G.
minutes.
Thank you.
Should I begin? Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm Laurie. I'm a compulsive reader. The text for today is, as I understand it, Appendix 2 on spiritual experience. I hope I'm right. And that's what I'm going to talk about. I've been in OA for 38 years. I've have had the miracle of recovery for almost 31 years. It'll be approximately May the 1st of 1993, which is sort of my day of abstinence and recovery. And I'm very happy to talk about the appendix on spiritual experience. It was a an appendix that was added in the second printing of the first edition in 1941. There were approximately 5,000 copies of the first printing of the first edition, and they took a 2 years to for them to sell out, and then they reprinted the book, but it went through some changes. The one major change was the change in step 12. It used to say, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action, we try to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So the main change was the promise that instead of saying this course of action, the result of these steps, and the emphasis on carrying the message to alcoholics and not just to others, especially alcoholics. So it was much more centered. But the most significant change here was the spiritual experience was changed to spiritual awakening, and Appendix 2 was added. The Appendix 2 is found in the fourth edition on page 567, and in the third edition and the second edition on page 569. And this appendix, which has never been taken out, this is one of those medical jokes that no one ever gets when I say it, has been in here for a long since the second printing, made clear a message that was very important to me. I am a third generation secular Jew. I was raised in a completely non-religious atmosphere. Rejection of the religion. My grandparents, we lived with my father's parents, my mother, my father, my brother, and I. And we were all of us, all my life, all my father's life, and most of my grandparents' life, people who did not believe in any kind of deity of any kind whatsoever. I went to college. I studied a lot of philosophy. I learned that you can neither prove nor disprove the existence of a deity. So that's why I would call myself an agnostical atheist. Agnostical meaning I don't know. I acknowledge I don't know, but atheist meaning I don't believe. So I have no belief in a deity. And the appendix in spiritual experience really is a game changer in a couple of different ways. It was put in mainly because most of the stories in the original printing of the big book, the first edition, well, all the stories were sudden conversion experiences, similar to what Bill experiences in Bill's story, the white light coming from the mountaintop or whatever it was, who are you to say there is no God, the voice that speaks from on high, all these amazing conversion experiences. And Bill and the rest of the people in the general office were getting these letters saying, I've never been hit on the head by God. I work the steps. I no longer want to drink. I have this incredible sense of serenity, but I didn't have this amazing experience that is described by some, and the stories all had, many of them had these sudden conversion experiences. Now, Bill does say, for most men, this experience is gradual, but for me, it was sudden. But almost all the experiences described in the first printing of the big book were sudden ones. So this chapter was put in, this appendix was put in to explain that there are fast and there are slow ways of finding spirituality, fast and slow ways of getting what the Big Book calls recovery from alcoholism. And let it not be forgotten that the Big Book talks about recovered and not recovering. The Big Book talks very clearly that there is a distinct difference between what we are when we begin the steps and what we become when we finish step nine. By the time we have finished step nine, we are guaranteed a recovery. And in many ways, it is described as a spiritual, well, it's originally described as spiritual experience. And this appendix makes clear, and the change in step 12 makes clear that it is now called a spiritual awakening, a slower process. Now, the first paragraph of the appendix on spiritual experience talks about the definition of what a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening is. And this definition takes it so far away from God that it was very welcome to me to be able to read it, because this is what I've had, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. That's the generic, this definition of what a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is. I have had that. I've had a recovery from my addiction of compulsive eating. It says it's manifested itself among us in many different forms. It's come out, it's displayed itself in many different forms. And in the next two paragraphs, they sort of apologize for these sudden conversion changes. We gave the impression these personality changes must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals, but this conclusion is erroneous. It wasn't our intention to create such an impression, but many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. And these are the stories that were contained in the first edition of the Big Book. But they say in the next paragraph, the fourth paragraph, most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is. He has finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration. And here's another part of the definition of a spiritual awakening: a profound alteration in his reaction to life. And this ties really significantly in with the description in the beginning of I'm having a senior moment, the fifth chapter, How It Works, where they talk about the need to accept that we want to be in charge of life, that that is our problem. We want to be the producer, the director, the not just the actor. We want to be in charge of the whole production. And this whole concept of changing our reaction to life is at the heart of what a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is. Now, it should be pointed out that the Big Book says that this can take place in a few months. In describing the educational variety, it still says it takes place in a few months as opposed to suddenly. And this is an aspect that is suddenly, it is lost on a lot of people whose approach to working the steps is to take it so slowly that our problem comes back and our mind takes possession of us. And we go back to that which we have to abstain from. The whole concept of a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, starts with the definition of what our problem is. And the Big Book's description of that is, once we start, we can't stop. And for OA, that's tough, because we have to figure out on an individual basis, that's the group conscience of OA, what it is that we must abstain from. And I have to abstain from things that other people in this room don't have to abstain from. And some people have to abstain from things that I don't have to abstain from. It's all individual. And anyone who tells you that you have to accept their plan of eating before you are abstinent is going contrary to the group conscience of OA. I think that's really important to point out. But at any rate, we have to figure out what causes what the doctor, as Dr. Silkworth called the phenomenon of craving, this unexplained concept that once we start, we can't stop. Clearly, the answer is to abstain from that which causes the cravings. But the real problem then becomes evidence, and this is evident. This made clear in the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, more about alcoholism, there is a solution, and even in We Agnostics. And that is that we lack the ability to stop from starting. On our own, we cannot get our minds straight, and our mind gives us absurd reasons to return to that which we know we should be abstaining from. That's our real problem. We can't stop once we started. Fine, a sane person would simply not start, but we can't stop from starting. So when the Big Book says the slow kind can be done in a couple of, in a few months, let's not forget how quickly that seems in comparison to so many ways of working the steps that people come up with. To do a step four that takes a year, or to wait until you're really, 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 really ready in step six to have God remove your defects of character, or things of that sort. All these methods of working the steps that keep you from getting to the actual changing steps, which are steps 8 and 9, where you are in effect saying, I have caused harm. I have defects of character which have caused me harm. I need to clean up my past as much as humanly possible so that I can live a life in which I do not have these defects of character. So, what the appendix on spiritual experience says is it takes a while, but not too long. And it doesn't have to be sudden, and it doesn't have to be deity created or deity related. It can be simply a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from our addiction. And the Big Book goes on in the rest of the appendix. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic, any compulsive eater capable of honestly facing his, her, their problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are essential. Then that fantastic quote, there's a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Attributed to Herbert Spencer, proof positive that the Big Book is not infallible, because Herbert Spencer didn't say it. It was said by a man named William Paley, two or three decades earlier than Herbert Spencer was writing. Anyone wants a reference for that, my email is in my name. This concept that what we need to find is sanity, step two promises us sanity, and the sanity and the recovery is simply, why would I go back to that which I must abstain from? I remember now, every time someone offers me something that I abstained from, I know in my mind, well, that's poison for me. And I've had that for over 31 years. The fact that ice cream can go bad in my freezer, and I don't care, doesn't bother me. I can watch other people eat all the things that I no longer eat, and it doesn't bother me. This miracle is the miracle of the 12 steps. And that's the spiritual awakening. It's a personality change sufficient to overcome my compulsive eating, and it is a change in my reaction to life. I no longer have life telling me, oh, you can have some. Now, how do I find this conception of God? And that is a really significant issue for many people. The Big Book provides an answer to that. Even though the chapter We Agnostics is written from a slightly patronizing point of view, oh, you'll get it. Just do the steps and you'll find our God. That's the way many of us read it. It really has the answer to what our God is. The Big Book says that our problem is that we are blocked off from what we deeply believe in. Deep down is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured, blocked off by pomp, pride, worship of other things, but ultimately is down there that it may be found. And the big book carries this blockage metaphor throughout in his discussions of step four and five, where it talks about unblocking the sunlight of the spirit. And this sense that really helped me was that deep down within me are fundamental beliefs, values, things I deeply believe in. I cannot justify them any more than anyone can justify their belief in a specific deity. They
Five more minutes,
believe,
Lori.
and the, thank you very much. They believe in a deity. I don't believe in that deity, but they believe in that deity. They may not believe in the values that I have. I don't care. But deep down within us are things that motivate us or should motivate us, that should guide us in our journey through life. And there's a pipeline, and that's in our heart. And the metaphor is that there's a pipeline between our heart and our head. Our head is where we react to life, where we think, and where we act in life. And that pipeline is blocked. And that's true for the deeply devout, fundamental religion person, as it is for the person like me who has no belief in any deity whatsoever, but has fundamental values in which I believe that I cannot justify any more than anyone can justify their faith. It just is. And the problem is our wish to be in charge of life, our wish to have things go our way, even if our motives are absolutely good, our wish not to have people suffer, or our wish not to have suffered ourselves, which are absolutely valuable, valid. The problem is we want to recreate the past, and we want to recreate, and we want to make the future different from what it's going to be, and we can't accept the reality of our situation. And what the steps do is show us how that essential wish to be in charge has harmed our relationships with other people, and how we can overcome that by making the amends two steps four through nine. We can identify what blocks us off, we can take the action necessary to unblock us, and then we get a flowing from the heart to the head of what we deeply believe in, and we begin to live according to what we deeply believe in. Now that gives us harmony rather than disharmony. We're no longer living in our addiction. We're living in our recreated value system, our deepest beliefs. We're living according to what we want. The direction we're getting, whether it's a direction pushing us from behind, which often people get from their scriptures, or a pull towards the North Pole, as it were, if you think of a compass, a pull towards what we deeply believe in. It doesn't matter. Our direction is coming from our connection to what we deeply believe in instead of what we want. And that means we can accept our role in life. So I think I have only one or two more minutes. So I'll just finish by saying this appendix really brings it to its head by making it absolutely secular and saying, just be open-minded and don't worry about what's going to happen. You will find a connection with what you most deeply believe in, whatever that is. And I like that. And it's been such a comfort to me knowing that I don't have to believe in what other people believe in, and other people don't have to believe in what I believe in. It just doesn't matter. What matters is that we're connected to the things that make us the best kind of human beings we can be. And when we connect to that, and the steps allow us to connect to it because it unblocks the passageway between what we deeply believe in and our heads, then we are sane, and being sane gives us the recovery that is the definition, the personality change that's the definition of a spiritual awakening. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lori. I really appreciate that. My name's Yvonne A. I am going to be helping Amy out since she's having some microphone problems. So we're now going to open up the meeting for questions or 3-minute shares, as this is a big book study. Sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask that you accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or star 9 if you're on the phone. I'll call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Would the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up? If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. All right, let's get underway. Chanel, please come in and share.
Thank you so much, Yvonne. Thank you for teaming up with Amy there. I appreciate it. Hi, I'm Chanel. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. I get to live in recovery today purely by the grace of God. Thank you so much for saying yes to doing this and taking it on. Lori, I really wanted to hear your take on this. I wanted to hear it, and I'm excited to share it with sponsees and newcomers. And that's enough fangirling for me. I have a question, and that is, when do you, I know you've been in a while, so when do you remember? Do you have like an experience you remember where you were like, oh, I've had that change? Not because you reached a certain step, but because you felt it or someone pointed it out to you. Thank you.
That's a very interesting question. I went through 7 years of relapse. When I never left the program, but I went through the steps over and over and over again. And I guess I had this from the very beginning, but it went away because I made two fundamental errors, which I'm not going to go into, but I stopped making those two errors and then I ended up with the recovery. When I realized it happened was when I was no longer tempted. That was the key. I was no longer tempted. And I was no longer tempted because I was at peace with the world. I'd done all I could to make up for whatever wrongs I had done. I was at peace. Being at peace gives me a sense of harmony with what I deeply believe in. And it was as simple as that. It wasn't a moment like, oh my God, I've suddenly recovered. I've never had that. Never. I've never been hit by a deity. No one's ever, healed or anything. No, I've never had that. I've remained a skeptical, a semi-rational person all my life. I hope that's the answer.
Thanks, Chanel, and thanks, Lori, for the answer. Stephen, go ahead and share with us.
First part is just a thank you. When I first came into OA and I was trying to comprehend the steps, my sponsor told me about your talks you'd recorded about each individual step, and I listened to all of them and I found them understandable and relatable, which was mind-boggling because I would read the book and my mind would go, what the F? It's like, I don't get it. And then I'd listen to your tape and I'd go, oh, it's that. I just feel I've never actually seen or heard you directly, but I just remember very fond memories of listening. And you had sort of blazed a path which I could follow, which, when I first came in, my mind was saying, we'll figure this out. I can do it. But if I could have done it, I wouldn't have been here. And I didn't have an aha moment. I came to a point where I stopped fighting and I started being rational and just being willing to see what is. It was a sense of ease that came. It wasn't like that I saw bright lights. For me, I grew up Jewish in Calgary, and I always believed I had a gotcha God. So the concept of God for me was punitive. And I had to gradually expand what I considered my higher power. First, it was good orderly direction, it was the power of the rooms, it was science, it was nature. It was something, one simple one was anything other in between my own two ears. And finally, I decided on a definition that I've stuck with, which is higher power is love. Would I listen to love? Would I accept higher power, guidance from love? Love happens to be that magic, four-letter word which works. It's not three, but it's four, but it's close enough. And it is interesting the dynamic where I'm willing to listen, not willing to listen, willing to listen, not willing to listen. And I still flip on that. It's like, and part of it is this question is like, I used to think of asking higher powers like having a golden ticket. I only get one chance and I want to make it work. So I don't want to ask frequently for assistance or guidance. And I'd say there's been a gradual shift where I'm willing to be willing. I don't quite know how to describe that. Where before is F off, thank you, you've helped enough, but I greatly appreciate you sharing today. Thank you.
Could I respond very briefly to two things? One is I don't want to take any credit for what I say. I'm really repeating what other people have taught me. So I want to say that. But the second thing is, in the rooms, there are many people who take for granted their particular deity as being common to everyone. And we have to remember that the purpose of every OA meeting is to carry the message to everyone who still suffers, whatever they believe in. And we have to be very careful. Whenever I talk about my conception of truth, love, justice, and beauty as being a god, I wish I didn't have to. But there are too many people who say the reverse, who will say, well, my god, who is called X, Y, or Z. So we have to remember that there are people like me. And every time I talk about that, I get people come up to me. I'm afraid to talk in the rooms because I don't believe in the kind of god everyone else believes in. And we have to remember to make it so inclusive. It's a very important thing. So I just want to respond to that too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you so much, Lori, for the expanded answer on that. Abby, go ahead and share with us.
Hi, my name's Abby. I'm also a reader food addict. Lori, thank you so much. Everything was very powerful tonight. While I was listening to you, I don't often take notes, and I was trying to take notes quickly just so I didn't forget. If I don't write it down, I forget. Specifically about the pipeline that you talked about, I guess from my heart to my head. I was taken very quickly through the steps recently, and I'm judging myself very harshly, and I'm wondering, somebody had actually already asked you when. Like, when did you realize it happened for you? But I think I have this probably incorrect, I guess, assumption that because I've been in the rooms for years, and that because I'm working 10, 11, and 12, that I should be, arrived or something. And I still struggle. Somebody had mentioned, like, do I listen? Do I not listen? Do I listen? Like, it's not intuitive for me right now to automatically go to God. I'm, learning a 10th and 11th step practice, and I'm new at it. And I guess I'm wondering, like, I don't know, in your experience, because you had mentioned that you were, in the rooms but relapsing, like, did you know that this last time was going to be it, like, that it was going to stick, or something was different? I don't know. I'm not really sure what I'm asking, because I'm just looking for a little support in that maybe I'm not, you have some experience with that. Thanks.
Well, first of all, thanks. The definition in the big book of recovery is not that suddenly you found God. It is that you can, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. And that means be around the stuff that we have to abstain from, whether it's behaviors or anything like that. That's the measure. Have we got that sanity? Is that serenity there? Are we in harmony with what we deeply believe in? That's the clear definition. If we're not, there's more work to be done. If it comes back, that's what I think step 10 is about, and working with other compulsive eaters is about, because we live in steps 10, 11, and 12. So I think that my mistakes, once I learned what my two mistakes were, and I'll be brief, say one of them was not ex was wanting to believe what my first sponsor told me. Was that I was addicted to binge eating, and that all I had to do was eat moderately. I could eat anything I wanted in moderation, which fit in with all the diets I'd ever been on. And so once I accepted that, while that may have been true for him, it wasn't true for me, that had to abstain from ingredients, from behaviors, from mixtures of ingredients, from some foods. Once I abstained from those, I mean, that was a huge, and the other was I didn't realize that step 10 required a lot more work than I used to put in to keep the spiritually fit. But once I realized that those were the mistakes, I knew I had recovered. I knew that that recovery was going to last because I knew I wasn't going to make those mistakes again. So I hope that answers your question. So I say to people who have relapsed, you may have fallen down the mountain, but you haven't fallen backwards. You've fallen on the other side. At the very least, you have an experience that you can learn, lean on, and learn from, and you can learn from your mistakes so that you're farther ahead than you were when you then than you started. And so it's never too late. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Eddie, and for the answer, Lori. Mindy, would you go ahead and share?
Thank you, Yvonne. My name is Mindy. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm back at day one, working the program and learning. And I saw you once, and I heard one of your tape recordings, Lori, and I think you're wonderful and such an inspiration for me because I was brought up Jewish, and it was kind of a punishing God. And we were more culturally Jewish than we were, religious. And it is such, it's so hard for me to handle all the God talk that goes on and speaking with God. And I'm speaking with God and getting messages back from God. And I'm so happy for people that this happens to, but it's not happening for me at this point. You never know. I know I'm not in charge, that's for sure. Something else is. And it's just a relief and lovely to hear you talk, and that just to remind people that it's a personality. It can be just a personality change. And this thing is doable for me because I sometimes have such a problem that I'll never be able to get this because I don't believe in a God. I went to a meeting earlier today, and the whole meeting was about their relationship with God. And, it was very difficult for me to listen to because they were not acknowledging all the other people in the room because everybody has different ideas of, like, this meeting. Choose your own conception. What is your conception of a higher power? And I'm working on that, and I'm, beginning all the steps. And you were just wonderful. I just wanted to say that, and I really appreciate hearing you tonight. So thank you.
Thank you, Mindy. All right, we are going to stop the recording now for unrecorded sharing.